The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall bring you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with a little bit of humor from All in a Day's Work. A graphic designer calling a client. Graphic designer, hi. I'm just updating the copy for your form and was wondering if you meant to say programs for the third request. Client, what I sent along was accurate. I wrote and edited it myself. Just copy it over exactly as it says. The graphic designer, please indicate which pogroms you've attended. Yeah, that should be programs. Pogroms, of course, meaning, you know, the terrible thing that took place in the Jewish life. And the 5-year-old that I babysat is convinced I pay his mom to let me hang out with him. The Art of Doing Nothing. Italian artist Salvatore Garru created an artwork that must be seen to be believed. Only you can't see it. It's invisible. Still, that didn't stop Garru from successfully selling the non-existent artwork to someone who saw enough there to shell out $18,300. The new order went home with the very real instructions. The work, which is to repeat invisible, must be displayed in a 5x5 foot space free of obstructions. Not to be outdone, Danish artist Johns Heing received an $84,000 loan from a museum in Denmark. The cash was to be used as part of an art piece to illustrate income disparity. Heing had a better idea. He produced 2 blank canvases titled Take the Money and Run. The work is that I have taken their money, he says. When electric keyboard player Johnny Greenwood joined the rock group Radiohead, he knew that lead singer Tom York had fired a previous keyboardist for playing too loudly. He came up with a novel way to stay employed. He turned off his instrument. During months of rehearsals, he said, I pretend to play, and Tom would say, I can't I hear what you're doing, but I think you're adding real interesting texture. And now for something a little healthy. An anti-migraine diet. What you eat and don't eat can help stave off debilitating headaches. Christy Nielsen, 49, remembers getting her first migraine when she was in third grade. She curled up in the back of the school bus with excruciating pain, not able to find the words to tell her parents what it felt like when she got home. When she hit puberty, the migraines got worse. By early 20s, she assumed that severe headaches were an unavoidable part of her life. It wasn't until years later that she finally found a cure in her kitchen. Migraine is a neurological disease that has a number of symptoms, including moderate to severe throbbing head pain that can stick around for anywhere from 4 hours to several days. According to the American Migraine Foundation, nearly 40 million people in the United States experience these headaches. While migraines can occur partly because of genetic factors, attacks may happen seemingly at random, set off by a trigger in the environment. Everyone's brain works slightly differently, but we know in general triggers can cause hyperexcitability to the cortex of the brain, says Danielle Wilhore, MD, an assistant professor of the Department of Neurology at the University of Colorado School of Medicine. One common trigger is food, and some common dietary triggers include alcohol, salt, sugar, chocolate, and caffeine. But there are many others, and scientists continue to identify more. Last year, for instance, a Brazilian study looked at some common fruits and vegetables to see their impact on headaches. They found that watermelons were the most common migraine trigger among the produce they studied, bringing on a headache within minutes in about 30% of the study participants. Another little-known trigger is bread. Gluten in such foods as crackers, pasta, and seasoning mixes may cause digestion woes and be dangerous for people with celiac disease. But for some, headaches can also be a symptom of gluten sensitivity. Gluten is a protein found in wheat, barley, rye, and some other grains. Wheat turned out to be the culprit in Christy Nielsen. When prescription drugs began to fail her, Nielsen turned to the alternative medicine. She visited Nicola McPherson Darshorn, a neuropathic doctor in San Diego, who listened to her symptoms and tested her for possible allergies. While awaiting the results, the doctor put Nielsen on an elimination diet, restricting her food intake to fruit, vegetables, and meat. The first weeks of the diet were very difficult, Nielsen recalls, but on day 13 it was as though a veil had lifted. The headaches were gone. The lab result revealed that Nielsen had a severe sensitivity to eggs and wheat, which had always been part of her diet. Today, Nielsen says her migraines are gone for good. Foods that heal. Some of the newest research isn't looking at what foods can trigger a migraine, but which foods and what kind of diets can prevent or minimize them. A study published last year by a team of researchers at the National Institutes of Health and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill found that a diet higher in fish oils rather than vegetable oils helped people suffering from frequent migraines to reduce the frequency and intensity of their headaches. In the studies, those on a diet lower in vegetable oil, linoleic / omega-6 fatty acids, and higher in fatty fish, omega-3 fatty acids, had a 30 to 40% reduction in total headache hours per day. Severe headaches per day, and overall headache days per month compared to the control group. For some study participants, the improvement was dramatic. Tanya Kompka had suffered weekly migraines for most of her life. Then in her 50s, she joined the NIH diet trial and increased her intake of fish. As she told the New York Times, the benefits were striking. After only a few months, her migraines had practically disappeared. She maintained the dietary changes after the study ended. "I haven't had a migraine, not even a mild one, in over 2 years," she says. For others, relief comes from plants, not fish. Last year, the British Medical Journal published a report from a team of New York-based doctors about a patient who had experienced remarkable relief of migraines after switching to a plant-based diet. The 60-year-old man had suffered from migraines without much relief for a dozen years. He'd already tried eliminating food triggers. Then he joined a study on the food migraine link and switched to a diet called LIFE, low inflammatory foods every day, which includes a lot of dark, leafy greens like kale and spinach, as well as blueberries and flaxseed. After 2 months, the man reported he was experiencing only one migraine a month instead of 18 to 24 a month he'd suffered previously. He now has remained migraine-free now for several years. The doctors believe that the diet may help both by eliminating triggers and by increasing levels of phytonutrients, which are found in plants. Other individuals with migraines have found relief by following ketogenic diets, low-fat diets, and low-glycemic diets. Clearly, since the food components of these plans differ dramatically, ketogenic diets, for example, are high in fat, and people with migraines react to food in very different ways, what works for one person may not work for another. Be a food detective. If you suspect that food may be contributing to your migraines, there are several steps you can take. The National Headache Foundation recommends keeping a log of the food you have eaten, the time you ate, and when your headache symptoms occurred. After identifying your trigger foods, see if eliminating them from your diet reduces or eliminates your headaches. Be careful about dropping too many foods from your diet without consulting a medical professional. Elimination diets can lead to malnutrition if not done carefully. Alternate, consider adding fish oil to your diet or try eating more plant-based foods. You can also experiment with different diets to see if overhauling your eating habits will banish your migraines for good. I tried it, keeping a laughter journal. If you asked me how many times I laugh each day, you'd have guessed once or twice at most. And still I started keeping a laughing journal. For 30 days I jotted down every time I so much as sniggered. Turns out I laugh way more than I thought, around 6 times per day. And while I like to think that I laugh at highbrow jokes, I'm a woman who cracks up when I hear what sounds like a dirty work on the radio, day 8, or when someone trips in the street, day 17. Though I did feel a little bad about that one. What's more, I learned that being happy is something you have to work on. Recognize that what brings you joy won't change your life, but it might lighten it a tad. And sometimes that's all you really need, Charlotte Granger. Calling all blood donors. Blood drives at schools and colleges, which make up a large portion of the American Red Cross collection sites, have dropped 62%. The need is far greater than the supply, says Tiffany Taylor, a spokesperson for the American Red Cross, which supplies about 40% of the nation's blood. There's no replacement for blood, and the problem is likely to get worse. As we go into the summer, we see a decline in donations, she says. Schools are out, people are traveling, the weather is nice, so donating blood drops to the bottom of the list. That's why Reader's Digest is putting out a call for all eligible donors to roll up their sleeves and help replenish the blood banks. Your donation can make a huge difference, especially right now. Here are a few key things to keep in mind whether you're someone who has donated before and has been afraid to do so again after COVID-19 or the first-timer in need of a dose of bravery. Fact: it's safe to donate. Blood banks are required to continuously adapt to CDC safety protocols. Blood drive workers frequently sanitize surfaces and change gloves between donors. Fact: it only takes about half an hour, and with one donation, they've saved 3 lives, says Kathy Hastings, mobile drive coordinator at Community Blood Bank of Northwest Pennsylvania in Western New York. Fact: You can locate your nearest blood donation opportunity by visiting redcross.org or downloading the American Red Cross donor app. After your donation, the app will store your blood donor card for easier future access. Whether you see a blood mobile, whenever you see a blood mobile, you can pull up to the app and scan it right in, says Taylor. The app also enables you to keep track of your blood pressure, iron, and more, so you can share your readings with your primary care provider. The app even lets you know which hospital received your blood. You might learn your donation went to a baby in the NICU, Taylor says. The world of medicine. This is news. Way to protect your ears. Exposure to loud noise, such as ear-splitting concert, is a common cause of hearing loss. But now we may have a way to prevent it. A University of Southern California study found that exposure to 100 decibels of sound or more, equivalent to a power lawnmower or motorcycle, causes inner ear fluid buildup and nerve cell damage. However, when researchers applied a salt-based solution inside affected ears 1 hour after nose exposure, the solution drew out the excess fluid, reducing the damage. After more testing, people exposed to loud noises could be scanned for possible fluid buildup and treated with a prescription that might end up saving their hearing. Well, I can go along with that since my hearing was damaged by flying helicopters with turbine engines. It doesn't help now, unfortunately. Exercise won't ruin your knees. It's commonly thought that your knees will eventually pay the price if you engage in high-impact exercises such as jogging and tennis. But a UK study that tracked the physical activity of 5,000 people for up to 12 years found that increased intensity frequency or time spent exercising didn't raise a person's odds of developing knee pain or arthritis. In fact, regular exercise and stretching can help lessen arthritis by strengthening the muscles around the knee and reducing inflammation and pain in the knee joint. And as a bonus, losing excess weight lightens the load placed on the knees, extending the benefits even further. Nuts benefit breast cancer survivors. A study has already shown that consuming nuts on a regular basis reduces your risk for heart disease and can help control type 2 diabetes. Now we've learned that eating a handful of nuts a day also lowers a woman's chance of breast cancer recurring by half and the risk of dying from the disease by one-third, according to a study published in the International Journal of Cancer. These health benefits apply to every type of nut, all of which are rich in nutrients such as unsaturated fatty acids and antioxidants that can help prevent or stop the growth of breast cancer cells. Get moving for your mental health. More than 500 million people live with depression or anxiety conditions that for many were exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. However, two new studies show that regular physical exercise can alleviate such symptoms. A University of Gothenburg clinical trial found that most patients with anxiety who did 12 weeks of aerobic and strength training saw major improvements, and the more vigorously people worked out, the more their anxiety symptoms lessened. For example, participants who exercised for an hour three times a week and reached 75% of their maximum heart rate became more relaxed than those who attained 60% of their maximum heart rate. To alleviate depression, one solution is to spend less time sitting, according to a study in Frontiers of Psychiatry. Researchers found that people who spent more time on the couch looking at screens early in the pandemic were more likely to be depressed than those who got up and moved more frequently. Exercise may help ease symptoms of anxiety and depression by releasing feel-good chemicals called endorphins, stimulating the growth of nerve cell connections in the brain regions that regulate mood and take the mind off negative thoughts. And here's one that's kind of dated. I apologize, but this is an earlier Reader's Digest. On Father's Day, every dad is a superhero. Deadpool actor Ryan Reynolds has a unique perspective on parenthood, which he shares in his Twitter feed. That's at Vancity Reynolds. My daughter loves being buried up to her neck in sand at the beach. Her little face lights up when I come back to get her the next day. No matter which kid's book I read to my screaming baby on an airplane, the moral of the story is always something about a vasectomy. Nothing better than simple joys of finding $5 in an old pair of pants, or discovering my wife and I had a second daughter over a year ago. I walked through fire for my daughter. Well, not fire, because it's dangerous, but a super humid room, but not too humid because my hair might get messed up. A friend tricked me into going to Wimbledon by telling me it was a men's single event, comedian Angela Barnes. And that's the end of that section. The future of tech. Cover story. Self-driving cars to space travel. We answer your questions about where technology is heading. And there's a picture of what looks like a futuristic car, a robot carrying a briefcase, and all kinds of fancy stuff. Every day, it seems, a new techie term pops up, leaving us non-techies, yes, me, asking questions that what sounds like a foreign language. What is an NFT, for example? And where exactly is the metaverse? If you're confused, you're not alone. While it might feel as if technology is speeding up, it follows a particular formula called Moore's Law, which has correctly predicted the pace of human advancement in technology for nearly six decades. Moore's Law suggested the number of transistors on a computer chip will double about every 2 years. This is a reliable indicator of how much and how quickly technology will change. And while Moore's Law has held true for all this time, it hasn't stopped other key trends in tech from accelerating far faster than computer chips can keep pace. From a new space race pitting billionaires like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos against each other, to big advancements in the artificial intelligence, or AI, that power robots and self-driving cars, we will answer some crucial questions to keep you on the cutting edge of the future of tech. By the way, China hopes to increase sales of self-driving cars by 20% by 2030. Question number one, when will I have a truly self-driving car? Like the jetpack sci-fi writers have promised us since the 1920s, the vision of a self-driving car that whisks us to work while we read the news has proved to be more problematic to implement in practice than in theory. So-called advanced driver assistance systems, ADASs, features are available in some cars, such as Tesla's electric cars, but they're not what would be called considered self-driving. Tesla's autopilot tool could help you stay in your lane while driving on the highway, but it's greatly only a level 2 on the 5-stage system of automation developed by SAE International, a driving standards organization. Level 5 will be a full self-driving experience with hands off the steering wheel. We aren't there yet, but that's in the United States. Look farther afield and the future is closer. If you look at China, the big cities like Shanghai and Shenzhen have self-driving cars doing passenger transportation, says Ferdinand Dufferhofer, director of the Center for Automotive Research in Duisburg, Germany. The self-driving taxis, which are run by Chinese auto and tech giants, are part of a countrywide plan to increase the sales of Level 4 vehicles, which allow drivers to switch off mentally while still requiring to keep their hands on or near the wheel, to around 20% of the total by 2030. What works in China might not work elsewhere, admits Dudenhofer, at least because differing attitudes about how data should be used. Chinese citizens might accept having the journeys of their vehicles tracked and analyzed to improve traffic flows, but Americans may be reluctant to agree to that tracking. Privacy concerns may stymie the promise of kicking back on your commute. Self-driving cars must constantly generate data from their sensors and software to make driving decisions, otherwise they would crash. Question number two, what is the metaverse? If you've likely been unable to avoid talk of the metaverse in the past few months, the term, first coined by sci-fi author Neal Stephenson in a 1992 novel, has become a vision of the future of technology in our lives. And if the hype is to be believed, it's where we'll be living for the rest of our digital lives. The metaverse is a further convergence of our physical and digital lives, says Kathy Hackle of Fortress Intelligence Group, a consultancy. But plainly, the metaverse is a 3D virtual space that can be accessed through virtual reality goggles, adding elements of the digital on top of their day-to-day lives. You could attend concerts and conferences in the metaverse staged in 3D digital representation of a nightclub or conference center. Elsewhere, you'll shop for shoes in a virtual Nike store or order food at a virtual McDonald's and have it delivered to your real-world home. It's the future of the Internet, but it's also about future connectivity, says Hackle. So far, most of the attention around the metaverse has been focused on the company formerly known as Facebook, which rebranded itself years as Meta, an indication of how strongly it believes in the future of the metaverse. Founder Mark Zuckerberg wants a billion of us to live, work, and play in the metaverse by 2030. But Hackle warns people not to view the social media giant as the center of the metaverse. It's not just one company, she says. No single company can build it either. It's also not enabled by a single technology, even though right now the way to enter the metaverse is to strap on a pair of virtual reality goggles. While early in the running may be made by Meta, the momentum will be picked up by others. And just because we have an idea of what the metaverse will look like now, it doesn't mean that's what it'll end up, as Hackle conscience. The way I explain is we're a high-speed train, destination Metaverse, he says. We don't know the stops, but we kind of know where we're heading. It's the future of the Internet, but it's also about further connectivity. Question number 3. Will robots take my job? Science fiction novels often turned into a dystopian nightmare partway through, and for blue-collar workers who are the bedrock of the labor force, there's a suspicion about the way robot revolution story will end. By 2035, 1 in 3 jobs could be automated by robots, predicts PwC, a business consultancy. Robotics is traditionally applied to the problem that fall into the categories of dirty, dull, and dangerous, says Jonathan Atkin, a robotics expert at the University of Sheffield in the United Kingdom. Automation of a repetitive process is always achievable. The lack of variability means that the process is the same, time after time. This is the reason that robots fell naturally into automotive production. It's been the case since the first robots appeared on the production lines. It's not just blue-collar jobs that are feeling the squeeze from the rise of robots. White-collar roles are also affected, particularly those focused on data sorting, a task well-suited for artificial intelligence. Financial services is one area that has turned to automated robots enacting trades. When a computer can pick stocks better and quicker than a human, it makes sense to utilize them, and almost all Wall Street firms do. Jobs where workers are less likely to be replaced by robots enclose in healthcare, although surgical robots, which are controlled by remote healthcare professionals in order to carry out a more precise process, procedures are already being used in hospitals. However, the gentle touch and caring reassurance of a well-trained nurse or doctor can't be replicated by a robot automaton. It's important to ask the question of whether we want robots doing certain jobs, says Atkin. In replacing a human, especially in a human-facing role, we're being asked to accept the robot. This is something that'll take time to achieve. People still like people. Question number 4. What is an NFT? Few things worth $4.2 billion are misunderstood as NFTs, but then few things have captured the zeitgeist like NFTs. The letters stand for the words non-fungible tokens, which are one-of-a-kind digital objects that can't be exchanged for each other or copied because of their encryption. What most people see as an NFT is art, says Nick Donilowski, founder of ORE Systems, a company that deals in NFT technology. For example, instead of owning a physical painting, you could buy ownership of an NFT, an original piece of digital art. Some of the world's biggest celebrities, including Gwyneth Paltrow, Paris Hilton, and Jimmy Fallon, proudly show off their NFT collections. Celebrities have often spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy the right to an NFT from collections with themes such as bored apes and pixelated punks. But despite the big-name endorsements, NFT have faced a wave of criticism. NFTs have ended up being stolen or found to be using images that don't legally belong to the artist behind them. Other NFT projects have been uncovered as a get-rich-quick scheme for the creators, while those who own the artwork are left holding the bag. If NFTs can overcome the bumps and bruises of the early negative publicity, they could become a commonly used bit of technology. The key word is if. Question number 5. What's next in space travel? 50 years ago, astronauts traveled to space in rockets designed, built, and maintained by NASA, and paid for by government funding. Today, astronauts are often billionaires enjoying a journey into low orbit on a rocket they paid from their billion-dollar bank accounts. The change feels like a giant leap, but it makes sense, says Laura Seward-Forsick, founder of Astrolytical, a space consulting company. More and more modern civilization relies on space, she says. Huge number of satellites orbit the planet, connecting us to everything from cell phones to GPS to Netflix, and there is big money in maintaining those systems. This doesn't get a lot of headlines, typically, but there are profit reasons why private companies want to go into space, says Forsick. As a private enterprise learns more about putting rockets and satellites into space, they're able to help the likes of NASA on their missions. That's important because NASA itself has become financially constrained. From its 1966 peaks, where spending on space took up 4.4% of the federal budget, that spending is now less than 0.5% of the country's total budget. NASA is using commercial companies to build a lot of the hardware to do a lot of those services of taking scientific payloads to the surfaces of the moon, says Forsick. The hope is that people will follow, possibly by 2025. but more realistic, says Forsyth, by 2030. If you're wondering why we're going back to the moon since mankind has already walked on its surface, the answer is we explored only part of it. We know a lot more, but we also know so very little, says Forsyth. So we want to go back with people who learn more, but more importantly, we want to go back to live and work there. Some even see the moon as an eventual staging area for human exploration of deep space. Mars is seen as the next stepping off point toward the final frontier, though whether we'll get there in our lifetimes is another question. More and more modern civilization relies on space. Now we go to the Department of Wit. For sale, my catalog of dad jokes. Once your kids stop laughing at, why didn't Han Solo enjoy his steak dinner? It was chewy. It's time to move on. I still remember the first time I told my then 6-year-old son, Lev, that a clam makes, by the way, this is Gary Rude to Oren, the clam makes calls with its shell phone. A laugh of recognition when he first got the joke was a moment I won't ever forget. When I told it a second time in front of his friends, Henry and Amir, I could see how proud he was that I had made his friends laugh. Excuse the bragging, but I was the cool dad. By Lev's 9th birthday party, things had begun to change. After the 7th or 8th time I asked him, what do you call some with no body and no nose? He dismissively rolled his eyes. I get it, Dad. Nobody knows. Stop it, Dad. I immediately shifted gears into food puns, reminding him and his friends that melons have weddings because they can't elope. But I got nothing except head shakes and averted eyes. I'm pretty sure I heard him say, sorry about my dad, to his friends as they all went off to play on their phones together. I used to be the life of every kid's party. When I was only an uncle, all the toddlers loved my got your nose bit. I was the only one who had a knock-knock joke at the ready. Knock-knock, who's there? No bell, no bell who? No bell, so I knock-knocked. Other parents loved that I could show up at any event and distract their kids with age-appropriate, grown-worthy wordplay, such as the ever-popular, did you hear about the guy who froze to death at the drive-in? He went to see clothes for the winter. Sure, there were other dads with their bits, but I felt as if no one ever stole my crown. My wife long ago tuned me out, but she knew that my never-ending quest for laughter from kids, no matter how unashamedly, was in my blood. I believe that as the kids got older, they took their cues to be embarrassed by me, from their mom's head-shaking disdain. We're working through the issue. I tell you all this because after a lot of soul-searching, I believe it's time. My kids aren't grown and out of the house, but I've come to realize that I'll never be able to compete with my past success. I need our relationship to grow. I need to be able to talk to my children about topics other than how the witch's car goes broom, broom. Thus, I'm offering my entire catalog of jokes for sale on the open market. Puns, threatening tickling bits, knock-knock jokes, goopy faces, fart noises and not from my butt, double takes, and even borderline appropriate spit take lines. I'm done with them all, and it feels like the right time to sell my legacy to some deserving donors. The catalog includes my most famous work, including my killer aside at my day's old nephew's bris. After my bris, I couldn't walk for like a year. And my faux indignant kindergarten graduation routine. Well now, he better get himself a job. I could go on. With all the great works of art, my collection is priceless. But I can tell you that the first time you get your toddler to laugh at the line, I don't trust stairs. They're always up to something. You'll feel it's worth any price tag. And for my next act, did the person who invented the phrase one-hit wonder invent any other popular phrases? Well, considering our earlier talk about migraines and different diets and stuff, this next article from Consumer Reports might be kind of interesting. The Meat Lover's Guide to Plant-Based Meat. CR analyzed 32 faux burgers, nuggets, fillets, and sausages for taste and nutrition and talked with experts about whether they're better for the environment. Here's what you need to know. And starting the page out, there's a whole bunch of pictures of things like Morningstar Farms veggie chicken strips, Beyond Meat, Beyond Burger plant-based patties, Impossible Foods chicken nuggets, Morningstar Farms incognito wonders of plant protein breakfast sausage links, and Garden plant-based fish fillets. 1 million years ago, humans first harnessed the powers of fire. If our predecessors were anything like Americans of today, they probably celebrated with a barbecue. We eat more meat and poultry than anyone else in the world, about 225 pounds per person in 2021. Our love for the stuff is so deep, that we're now harnessing the power of science to turn plants into meat. Call it fake meat, veggie meat, or meat analog, but more consumers are turning to meat 2.0. We're not talking about your granddad's black bean burgers here. Those aim to taste, look, taste like, and have the texture of meat. More Americans trying to eat more plants or less meat, 53%, according to an August 2021 Consumer Reports nationally represented a survey of 2,165 adults. But not everyone is ready to trade sirloin for tofu. Guilt-free for vegetarians and animal lovers, yet meaty enough for carnivores, the current crop of plant-based meat may make cutting back on animal protein easier to swallow. And we're beyond burgers. There's now even plant-based fish. Colonel Sanders recently served up chicken and nuggets, and Delta Airlines added lamb meatballs to its menu. All of those are in parentheses. Evidently, the trend is cleared for takeoff. Consumers and nutritionists alike have been exploring the taste, plus the nutritional and environmental merits of these products, since Beyond Meat hit the scene in 2015. 7 years and an impossible whopper later, can the new meat substitutes really fit into a healthy and sustainable diet? To find out, CR looked at 32 plant-based burgers, fillets, nuggets, and sausages, comparing them on test and nutrition. We also dug into the research and talked with nutritionists and environmental scientists to answer common questions about these brave new foods. First of all, what's in plant-based meat? For some consumers, that's not in it, namely animals, is reason enough to give it a try. Others, however, are put off by what is in it, namely a long list of unfamiliar ingredients. In fact, 19% of the people in the 2021 nationwide survey by Matson, a food research firm, cited too many ingredients I can't pronounce as a reason to take a pass. Creating meat from plants takes some doing. Most start with a protein, often pea or soy, to provide structure. These aren't the whole foods, but the concentrate and isolate extracted in a lab. Oil is added to make the food juicy and tender. Binding agents such as methylcellulose, starch, and gums give texture. Some manufacturers fortify the products with nutrients such as vitamin B12, so they're closer to meat. One of the fish replacers, from Gardein, had added omega-3s to the heart-healthy fats in fish. The products also contain meaty flavorings and colorings, though the details are often proprietary. Which tastes most like meat? None were identical, but some came pretty close, and our panel of sensory experts judged at least one in each category to be very good. It was the overall flavor profile that gave the impression of meat, says Amy Keating, registered dietitian to CR nutritionist who oversaw our testing. Among the burgers, Impossible and Beyonds were the most meat-like. Impossible's chicken nuggets came closest to tasting like typical chicken nugget, and Morningstar Farms' veggie chicken in strips shredded like chicken breasts, Keating says. Three pork pretenders, Beyond Meat's breakfast and sweet Italian sausages, and Morningstar's breakfast links, were reminiscent of the real thing. Gardein's fish-and-chip-style fillets and Good Catch's patties were at least somewhat fish-like. Of course, food doesn't have to taste like meat to taste good, and CR's testers rated several without a meaty taste highly, including Boca's All-American Veggie Burgers and Quarren's Meatless Nuggets. Do they really cross less than real meat? No, at least not now. In early April 2022, a pound of ground beef in the U.S. averaged $3.99 a pound. Boneless chicken breast, $4.14. The least expensive plant-based meat in our test was a tofurkey sausage at $5.71 a pound. The priciest, Daring's chicken, at $16 a pound. The difference may diminish in coming years if meat prices continue to rise and plant-based meat production becomes more efficient and competitive. For example, Amazon Fresh just launched a budget-friendly line of plant-based meat, including chicken and nuggets, for about $6.30 a pound, and plant burger patties for $6.40. Are plant-based meats healthier? That's the main reason people say they're interested in plant-based meats. CR survey found, but it's not clear that they are always healthier. Many products in CR's test had fewer calories and less artery-clogging saturated fat. The sausage, for example, had less per serving than the 6 grams in a serving of Jimmy Dean fully cooked sausage, but that wasn't true across the board. While 8 of the burgers had less saturated fat than what's in 85% lamb grief, 2, Gardein's and Impossible's had more. Some of these Mott burgers have highly saturated coconut or palm oil, Keating says. That's because they melt slowly, giving a similar mouthfeel to animal fats. Most of the products CR looked at, unlike real meat, had lots of sodium, which can raise blood pressure. In general, the plant-based sausages, breaded chicken nuggets, and fish fillets had amounts similar to those in their counterparts from the farm and the sea. But nuggets and raised and rooted had more sodium than Tyson's real ones. No surprise, plant-based proteins have more fiber. Meat doesn't have any. Most don't have a lot, less than 3 grams per serving. The Morningstar's Incognito meat patties have 8 grams. That's almost a third of the daily value, and comparable to what you get from a serving of whole plant protein such as beans. What about all those added ingredients? This is a worry. Lots of evidence support plant-based diets, but most come from research involving whole foods, says Basil's research, says Bashira Erahar, registered dietitian, who has plant-forward nutrition counseling practice in Charlotte, North Carolina. That means lots of fruits, vegetables, and beans, and grains in modest amounts of poultry, fish, and low-fat red meat. These mock plant meats are plant-based, but they're not whole foods, and that raises concern among nutrition pros, because growing research links the ultra-processed foods to increased risk of heart disease, weight gain, and more. It's not clear if processed meats pose the same risk, says Stephen Van Villet, Ph.D., of the Center for Human Nutrition Studies at Utah State University in Logan. Not all ultra-processed foods are bad, he says, citing soy and almond milk as healthy examples. Still, Van Vliet, the lead author of a study comparing grass-fed and plant-based burgers, sees important difference between the two. Notably, whole foods contain thousands of compounds in addition to those listed on the nutrition labels. Foods are more complex than some of their parts, he says. It's a challenge to put together a replacement that contains them all. It can be a struggle to include even some familiar nutrients. One study found that swapping animal products with plant-based meat and dairy makes it harder to get enough calcium, potassium, magnesium, zinc, and especially vitamin B12, which is found naturally only in animal foods. Among products CR looked at, only 5, 2 chickens and 3 burgers had vitamin added. Trying to recreate the benefits of whole foods can raise other issues. Impossible's burgers, for example, have soy hemoglobin, a compound created from soybean roots that chemically similar to the hemiron in meat. The Impossible Foods founder Pat Brown says it produces an explosion of flavor and aroma when you throw a burger on the grill. But some research links the heme in beef to colon cancer. So in theory, an Impossible burger may host a similar problem, says Michael Hansen, Ph.D., a senior scientist at CR. Which have the most protein? The makers of plant-based meats play up protein. 27 of the 32 products CR tested come with a protein claim. In some cases, the amounts are fairly close to what's in the real thing. For example, a Morningstar Farm Meat Lover's Burger has 27 grams, and No Evil Foods chicken strips have 25 grams. While protein is essential, the average American gets plenty. Much of it does come from meat, which raises concerns, says Dana Holmes, Ph.D., a dietitian at the Ronald Reagan UCLA Medical Center in Los Angeles. She says meat protein is inflammatory, which could make tumors grow faster and pose other health issues. That suggests that getting more protein from plants could be a good thing. Some of that can come from faux meats or from beans, lentils, tofus, nuts, and nut butters. There's some protein in many foods, and small amounts add up, Keating says. Are they really better for the environment? That is the second most common reason people give for trying plant-based meats. CR survey found that meat clearly contributes to climate change. The way we go, transport, and consume food accounts for about a third of the planet's heating gases created by humans, with animal-based food causing twice as much as plant-based ones, according to a 2021 study by the journal Nature Food. Who's not obviously not prejudiced at all. Beef alone accounts for roughly half of the emissions linked to U.S. diets, but provides just 3% of the calories. It also takes about 110 gallons of water to produce a pound of rice, compared with 1,840 gallons for a pound of beef. So moving toward plant-based proteins can be a powerful way to address climate change. And a 2020 analysis led by researchers at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore found that plant-based meats could help with carbon footprint, about 90% smaller than beefs and 40% less than poultry's. On the other hand, they're 1.6 to 7 times more energy intensive than tofu, peas, or other less processed plant proteins. And beef raised with sustainable farming practices, such as pasturing fewer cattle on grass and tilling waste into the soil, may produce fewer greenhouse gases too. Nutrilist Eudora sees these foods as mixed bag, but thinks that if they help you move toward a plant-based diet, that's good. Starting with a plant meat that might make sense if you're not relying on it every day, and you're including whole foods, she says. Shanika Wildhurst, Associate Director of Product Sustainability Research and Testing at Consumer Reports, agrees, especially on the climate change. Even being heavily processed, she says, plant meat has less of an environmental impact than industrial animal production. Meaty meatless meals. Meat substitutes can help you ease into a plant-based diet, but there are other meaty vegetarian options too. Try these easy recipes with mock meats and with some ingredients that have a meaty texture and deep savory flavor called umami. And we've talked about umami before. What you eat alongside plant-based meats can offset some of their nutritional downside, says CR nutritionist Amy Keaton. Surround them with healthy ingredients, not a side of fries, and alternate them with other meatless dishes. Veggie sausage pizza. Slice one mock pork sausage into link rounds. Brown 1 teaspoon of olive oil. Spread 1/2-inch pre-baked whole wheat pizza crust with a 2/3 cup marinara. Top with 14-ounce canned artichoke hearts, drained and chopped. Sausage, 1 cup shredded mozzarella, and 1/4 cup chopped basil. Bake at 375 degrees until the cheese melts and is golden, about 10 minutes. Thai-style chicken. Saute 2/3 cup chopped onion and 1 teaspoon fresh ginger and 1 tablespoon of olive oil, about 4 minutes. Add 2 teaspoons of chopped garlic. Cook 1 minute. Add 5 ounces chopped mock chicken. Saute about 3 minutes. Stir in 2 teaspoons of soy sauce, 2 species of fish sauce, 1 teaspoon of brown sugar, and 1 tablespoon of lime juice. Remove from heat and stir in 2 tablespoons each of scallions and cashews. Add 1 teaspoon of cilantro. Divide mixture among 6 lettuce leaves. Chicken boil in orange dressing. In a large boil, top 1 cup cooked brown rice with 1/4 cup shredded carrots, 1/2 cup each napa and red cabbage, 1/4 cup mandarin oranges, and 3 tablespoons of toasted almonds. Whisk 2 tablespoons of orange juice, 1 teaspoon of lime juice, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 1 teaspoon of sesame oil, and 2 teaspoons of soy sauce. Heat 5 breaded mock chicken nuggets or 2 breaded tenders per package, directions. Slice into strips and add to the bowl. Toss with dressing and divide into 2 bowls. Crispy fish tacos. Heat 4 breaded mock fish fillets per package, directions, then slice. Whisk 2 tablespoons of mayonnaise, 1 tablespoon of lime juice, 1/2 teaspoon of honey, and 2 tablespoons of cilantro. Toss 1 1/2 cups tricolor cabbage slaw mix with dressing. Heat 6 6-inch corn tortillas until warm. Divide fish pieces among tortillas. Top each with slaw and 1/4 avocado cubed. Miso portobello burger. Mix paste of 2 tablespoons of white miso, 2 teaspoons of water, 1/2 tablespoon of sriracha, 1 teaspoon of olive oil, and 1 teaspoon of fresh ginger. Spread on top and bottom of 2 clean portobello caps. Chill 30 minutes. Saute 1/2 cup of sliced onion and 2 teaspoons of olive oil, 15 minutes. Cook portobellos in a skillet, 2 minutes per side. Toast the whole wheat buns. Put portobello cap, half the onions, 1/4 cup baby spinach, and 1/4 cup sliced bell pepper on the bottom halves. Mix 1 tablespoon mayo, 1 teaspoon sriracha, and 1/2 teaspoon of honey. Spread on top half of the buns. Sun-dried tomato and spinach pasta. Cook 6 ounces of whole wheat spaghetti. Wizard 1/2 cup water. Saute 1/3 cup chopped sun-dried tomatoes, 1 teaspoon chopped garlic, and 1 pinch of red pepper. About 1 minute. Add 1 tablespoon of white wine. Cook 1 minute. Add 5 cups of baby spinach. Stir until wilted. Add pasta and 1/2 cup pasta water. Toss, remove from heat, and add 1/4 cup toasted pine nuts and 1/4 cup grated parmesan. Toss with 1 teaspoon lemon juice and chopped parsley. Okay, I'm going to run down the different categories here and the descriptions of them. Beyond meat, Beyond Burger plant-based patties. Thick and juicy with browned exterior, taste, and texture. Close to a burger's, moderately salty. Boca All-American veggie burgers. Thin, moist, and slightly chewy. Crisp exterior, good blend of onion and other savory flavors. Kind of salty. Impossible Foods burger patties. Looks like a medium-rare burger and tastes close to one, too. Savory flavors and moderately salty. 365 Whole Food Market. Meatless plant-based burgers, traditional. Moist and slightly chewy, but not at all similar to a beef burger. Mild onion and garlic flavors. Dr. Prager's Perfect Burger. Crisp outside, slightly chewy and moist, pink interior. Looks like beef, but has a smoky flavor that leaves a slightly bitter aftertaste. Good and Gather from Target. Plant-based, meatless beef-style patties. Slightly chewy, with a crisp exterior on the dry side, has some burger-like brown smoky notes. Morningstar Farms Incognito, 100% plant protein burger patties. Slightly dry and chewy, with faux gristle bits. Appearance is more like beef than its taste, with some salt, spices, and smoky flavors. Morningstar Farms Vegan Meat Lovers Burger. Almost charred exterior, stringy feature, flavorful with some salt, slightly spicy heat, and big brown flavor. Gardein Ultimate Plant-Based Burger. Very spongy, looks like a burger but doesn't taste like one. Some salt, browned onion, and garlic flavors. Trader Joe's Protein Patties Plant-Based Burgers. These things are a tongue twister. Has a rare, almost raw meat appearance and texture. Bland with smoky to ashy flavors. Chicken Nuggets. Impossible Foods Chicken Nuggets. Came closest to tasting like a typical chicken nugget. Moist, flavorful, moderately salty with a black pepper kick. Quorn Meatless Nuggets. Thick, crispy breading, chicken-like texture. Flavorful overall with moderate brown and salt and black pepper flavors. 365 Whole Foods Market Chicken-Style Plant-Based Nuggets. Lightly brown, slightly crisp breaded nugget with slightly chickeny flavor. Mild seasoned with soft exterior and oily mouthfeel. Beyond meat, beyond chicken, plant-based breaded tenders. Thick tenders with slightly crisp exterior, good chickeny flavor, but rubbery fit texture on the salty side with spicy heat. Jack and Annie's Crisp Jack Nuggets. Slightly soggy and mushy with a grayish exterior. Has moderate chickeny flavor with garlic and spicy heat. Simulate Nugs, plant-based nuggets. Brown, crunchy breading flavor dominates. Mild flavor isn't very meat-like, and interior is on the dry side. Raised and Rooted plant-based nuggets. Slightly crispy outside with a slightly spongy interior. Mildly seasoned with chicken broth-like and black pepper flavors. Chicken Pieces. Morningstar Farm Veggie Chicken Strips. Looks and shreds like chicken breast. A little heavy on the poultry seasoning, but flavorful overall. Alpha Foods Plant-Based Chicken Grilled Chicken in Strips. There's no mistaking it for real chicken, but it has a nice charred savory flavor and a slightly chewy texture. Daring Original Plant Chicken Pieces. Crispy brown pieces that are moderately salty and flavorful, chewy and somewhat tough. Gardein Plant-Based Chicken Strips. Slightly spongy strips with brown flavor, mildly seasoned. Sweet Earth Mindful Chicken Strips. Tan chunks that are soft and slightly chewy, taste mostly of soy with mild seasonings. No Evil Foods. No Chicken Comrade Cluck Shredded Plant-Based Strips. It's a mouthful. Dark, chewy, rubbery chunks that are on the dry side. Slightly soy sauce flavor and mild seasoning. Not chicken-like in texture or flavor. Fish Fillets. Gardein Plant-Based Fish Fillets. Crispy batter coating, interior more chewy than lakey, mildly seasoned and slightly salty. Good Catch. Plant-Based Fish Burgers Classic Style. Thick and moist with big lemon and green onion flavors. Slight garlic and salt. Bit chewy but decent overall. Sophie's Kitchen. Plant-Based Fish Fillets. Slightly mushy, fish-like cake. Tastes better than it looks. Moderate ginger flavor. And pork sausages. Beyond Meat, Beyond Breakfast Sausage Classic Plant-Based Patties. Small, thick patty. Slightly crispy and moist. Moderately salty with char flavor, fennel note, and slight heat. Morningstar Farms Incognito. 100% plant protein breakfast sausage links. Small links with sweet and smoky flavors. Texture slightly chewy and spongy, similar to that of a hot dog. Light Life Plant-Based Breakfast Patties. Slightly soft on the dry side. Harsh rosemary flavor and spiciness dominates. Beyond Meat. Beyond Sausage Plant-Based Links Sweet Italian. Very large, thick link. Juicy and slightly chewy, tastes mostly of fennel and salt. Field Roast. Plant-based sausages, Italian garlic and fennel. Rubber and somewhat dry. Spicy heat with overpowering red pepper and fennel flavors. And last but not least, Tofurky Plant-Based Original Sauces Italian. rubbery, large length with a dry texture, has sun-dried tomato and big spicy heat flavors. Seasoning's a bit harsh. Since we're talking about foods, let's look at this one. What is corn syrup exactly? Here's a scoop on one of the most commonly used ingredients in processed foods. You use it in recipes for pecan pie, marshmallows, and homemade ice cream. See it listed in the ingredients of a pint of sorbet and a box of delicious dunkable cookies. And you find it in all sorts of fast food, from the obvious McDonald's Sprite to the unexpected Big Mac sauce. Corn syrup is one of the most common ingredients in the foods we eat each day, and it's as controversial as it is misunderstood. So what is corn syrup, and why are there so many confusing food facts about it? Corn syrup is a thick, sweet syrup made from the starch of corn and used in both home and commercial cooking, says Trinity Wade, a nutritionist in Omaha, Nebraska. However, the corn syrup you find at the grocery store is not to be confused with high fructose corn syrup, HFCS, which is produced specifically for use in processed food and drinks. To help you decode the many myths around corn syrup, we're laying out the important facts and answering your most pressing questions, from what is corn syrup to is corn syrup bad for you, and beyond. Keep reading to keep the ubiquitous sweetener you've no doubt tasted before. What exactly is corn syrup? In its purest form, corn syrup is a type of sugar that comes from you, guessed it, corn. Unlike granulated sugar, which comes from sugar cane and sugar beets, corn syrup is a liquid. Both sweeteners are naturally occurring, but they have different chemical properties. Corn syrup is pure glucose, a simple sugar molecule, while table sugar is sucrose, a combo of glucose and fructose molecules. What is light corn syrup? Shop the baking oil aisle of your local supermarket, and you spot two different types of corn syrup, light and dark. Dark corn syrup has an intense molasses-like flavor and deep brown color. That comes from the addition of refiner's syrup, the product of refining cane or beet sugar, and in some cases, flavored extracts and food coloring. Light corn syrup, on the other hand, doesn't have any added coloring, but it may have added flavors, most commonly vanilla extract. What's the difference between corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup? Though both corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup are made from cornstarch, according to the Food and Drug Administration, regular corn syrup is essentially 100% glucose. High fructose corn syrup, which is used in mass-produced packaging foods like soft drinks like McDonald's Coke, goes through further processing. Similar to corn syrup, HFCS is derived from corn, but undergoes a process that changes some of the glucose to fructose, resulting in a much sweeter syrup, said Wade. In fact, fructose can be up to twice as sweet as glucose. What is corn syrup made of? Corn syrup is made from cornstarch, which comes from endosperm of corn kernels. After the starch is extracted from ground-up kernels, it is converted into corn syrup using a process called acid hydrolysis. Here's how that works. The cornstarch is mixed with water and a weak solution of hydrochloric acid. Then it's heated under pressure, which breaks down the starch molecules into glucose. From there, it's boiled down so the excess water evaporates and a thick syrup remains. So how is corn syrup used? In recipes, corn syrup acts as both a sweetener and a thickener. That's why you'll add it to white chocolate to make bottling chocolate, for example, and because its glucose molecules are different from the sucrose molecules of granulated sugar, corn syrup helps prevent sugary foods from crystallizing. Though it has uses in the home kitchen, corn syrup is mostly used by the commercial food industry to help improve texture and maintain freshness in packaged and processed foods. The reason corn syrup is so common in the foods we buy, it's significantly cheaper than cane sugar, which helps food companies keep their prices down. What foods contain corn syrup? Recipes for homemade ice cream, sorbet, popsicles, jams, and jellies, and certain desserts may call for corn syrup. And, of course, it's found in plenty of processed snack foods, even fancy Starbucks drinks thanks to ingredients like the caramel sauce. Even more prevalent is high fructose corn syrup. You'll find high fructose corn syrup in a majority of soft drinks and processed foods, says Wade, knowing that packaged goods are more likely to use HFCSs than the type you use at home. Take a look in your cupboard and you'll find a high fructose corn syrup in your cereals, sodas, juices, baked goods, ice creams, jams, and even applesauce. You'll even find the HFCSs in unexpected foods such as barbecue sauces and mustard. Is corn syrup bad for you? According to the Mayo Clinic, There's currently insufficient evidence to say that high fructose corn syrup is any less healthy than any other types of sweeteners, but having too much sugar in your diet is undeniably healthy. Unhealthy. Sorry about that. Scientists have conclusively linked it to health problems such as weight gain, type 2 diabetes, and metabolic syndrome, and high triglyceride levels. Wade says that the problem with high fructose corn syrup isn't the fact that it has fructose, is that the sweetener is found in so many food products that it's easy to accidentally go overboard with your sugar consumption. I still try to avoid the HFCSs as much as possible because it adds an abundance of unnecessary calories and sugars to the diet, says Wade. The latest version of the Dietary Guidelines for Americans 2020 to 2025 recommends that less than 10% daily calories come from added sugars. So if you're eating 2,000 calories a day, that means less than 200 calories should come from added sugars. It's important to reduce your intake of added sugars, no matter whether these calories are coming from corn syrup or another sugar. What can you use instead of corn syrup? Sugar is sugar, so there's not much of a reason to substitute corn syrup for another sugar syrup. Yeah, but if you're out of corn syrup and need it for a recipe, here are some things you can use as a corn syrup substitute. 1 cup of brown rice syrup, 1 cup of agave, 1 cup of honey, 1 cup of granulated sugar mixed with 1/4 cup of water. The next time someone asks, what is corn syrup, consider yourself prepared. Brush up on other trivia by reading about the history of pizza and the real reason saffron is so expensive. And we're getting close to close, so let's have some humor. Laughter the best medicine. And there's a picture of a man getting ready to knock on a door, and his mind thinks, I hate this part. And the title on the door is The Knock Knock Joke Company, Incorporated. A turtle walks into a bar and orders a glass of water. The bartender hands the turtle and waters it and watches it slowly walk off. The next day, the turtle returns and orders another glass of water and again inches away. This goes on for a few days until the bartender finally asks, instead of water, wouldn't you like a beer or a snack? Not now, shouts the turtle. My house is on fire. I wish days of the week underwear were still a thing, so I would know what day of the week it is. It's Nick's First Coast College apartment, and he is showing it off to a friend. The big attraction, a large brass gong in the living room. What's the gong for? Asks the friend. It's not a gong, it's a talking clock, says Nick. A talking clock? How does it work? Watch, says Nick. He picks up a hammer and gives the gong an ear-shattering pound. Suddenly, from the other side of the wall, a neighbor screams, it's 2:30 in the friggin' morning. And with that, we have just about run out of time for today's episode of the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.